Well, for the rest of tonight, we're going to have open lines for you and not just election calls. As a matter of fact, John McCain made a stop into Roswell, New Mexico. It was his fifth stop of the day. And while he was there, he said, by the way, I've been here to Roswell before, and I know of the alien landing, and I'm pleased to announce that I've received the alien endorsement. So how can I not win? And I'm proud. Maybe he'll reveal something. Who knows? Next up, your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to the phones. We've got open lines for you tonight. 3 hours. We'll go to you, Fred, in Los Angeles. How's the weather out your way, Fred? I'll be there very soon. Hello, Freddy. Well, Fred is not in Los Angeles then. So we'll go next to east of the Rockies, James in Illinois. Hey, James, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
It's an honor to talk to you. I got a two-part question, then I'll let you go. I was curious, after the election and we get a new president, is the fuel prices going to go up? And then my second question is, how come diesel is more expensive than gasoline when it used to be the other way around?
It used to be the other way around. Now they say it takes more energy and more material to process diesel. I don't know. I'm not an expert on how they manufacture it. But a lot of truck drivers have told us that it's really hurting them. Now, it's dropped a little bit. I don't know. What is diesel now? Do you know?
Oh, man. Well, it's three and change, about 3.25 now.
Still high.
I know they're about 4 months ago, I put $850 into a truck.
Ugh.
Just one fill-up.
Crazy. You know what? You'd be happy at what level? 250?
Yeah, I'd be real happy.
Yeah, I think people could handle that. Gasoline? $1.85, that would be great, too. In terms of after the election, will the prices go up? Yes, I think eventually they will. Right now, we're into this worldwide crisis and recession, and the demand right now just isn't there. People aren't using as much oil for cars, factories, everything else. And so, you know, it's going down. Let's go to Ryan, west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hey, Ryan, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Great. Now, one thing I wanted to say real quick is that if the aliens are behind any of this at all and they like a good puppet, McCain might have something there. He might be a good pick.
Oh, there's your shot.
Now, your guest on had something to say about he didn't think that the oil prices were being manipulated by the United States government. I think it's either one or both, naive or ignorant or maybe just hopeful, that the country whose currency, basically the oil that's traded in, has no ability to manipulate it at all. I mean, that's like saying that anything else in this economy and in this world is not manipulated at all by any government whatsoever. It's ludicrous to think that they're not manipulating that.
I think there's manipulation in just about everything that's been going on this planet, in
exactly.
Every form or fashion.
I mean, I understand he's got to keep his invitation welcome on CNN and MSNBC and wherever else he's been, but to say that, I think, is a little bit...
But that's his opinion.
I understand, and everybody's entitled to their opinion, but, you know, to say that on a station or a program such as yours that has such a widespread reach, to people who obviously no better, I think, is a bit insulting. But
insulting? Or no, not insulting.
I suppose, but I'm entitled to my opinion as well.
Right.
Thanks, George, and you're doing
okay.
A great job.
That's what it's all about, and that's what it's going to continue to be all about. You may not like what you hear from certain people, but they're entitled to their opinion. We start muffling people because we don't like what they say. We don't like their views. We got a problem in this country. Let's go to our first-time caller, Steve in Florida. Open line time. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, Steve. I'm from Tallahassee, Florida. I got two questions. Gold. People are encouraged to buy gold. When they devaluate gold, then what are they going to do? They can't hide them from the money checkers. $7 million to the people. Another question. People get all this money from the government as opposed to giving it to the big financial institutions. People quit their jobs. The economy will crash then. No taxes.
Yeah, you can't give them too much. Give them enough to go out and have a good time for a couple months.
But somebody needs to answer the thing about the gold, and I'll answer the other man's question. Diesel is a byproduct of gas. So when they make gas, that's a waste product, and they use that, see? So that's where that comes from.
Yeah, but in the old days, diesel was under the price of gasoline. So how did it flip-flop? What caused that?
They subsidized the price of the gas by floating it over into the byproduct diesel, the waste. Or they were greedy. I don't know.
Probably the greedy part, because they probably knew once diesel went up, so did everything else. Casey in Cleveland, Tennessee, you're up with us. Hey, Casey.
Hey, George. It's good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
I wonder if I might just be able to have maybe just a couple or 3 minutes to explain something that's really been on my mind, and I think on a lot of people's minds for a long time.
Well, we'll start. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. In doing research and also, in just basically living my life, I come to notice that there was this overwhelming sense of surveillance in our society today. And I think I've discovered precisely where that comes from, the source of it, and where it began and where we're currently at now, and how it is critically important that people understand the risky nature of this enterprise that is taking control of the world. And it started, oddly enough, with the crash at Roswell. And people always think that the crash at Roswell was for maybe weapons or some sort of propulsion technology, but that wasn't what they really wanted. What was key that they attained from that was the ability to use the communication systems in that craft. And the way that they used those communication systems and reverse engineered them and put them into the satellites that we have going around in geostationary orbit today is the key to the, like in the movie Zeitgeist, when it shows the prison around mm-hmm. the planet, that's what it's representing. And those people are actually part of the scheme against humanity. And what it is they took that technology and put it in these satellites, and basically they figured out how to reverse engineer the human mind from it. And basically the human mind is a computer, and they're able to use these technologies to directly communicate with the human mind. And it's what George Orwell discovered and why he retreated in the way that he did and wrote about thought crime in his book, 1984, to warn the future society about what they had planned. Now, that's where they were at then and what they were doing. It has to do with all from Bell Labs and then all of the computer industry on the West Coast, Boeing satellites, Microsoft, they're all in on it together. They're all in on it to enslave humanity. And what's important is that at this point where they're at is at the place called Commonwealth Research Institute in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And up there in Pennsylvania and in that whole northern Virginia, Pennsylvania area, they're all congregated there, and they're in a competition with the West Coast.
But what are they trying to do? What are they doing up there, Casey?
Okay, what are they doing? Good question. What they're basically doing are using the world's religions through a group called the Family Foundation based in Washington, D.C.
Casey, you're now going too far out on me, way too far. You had me for a while on the surveillance. I like that, but you're going way too far out, way too far out. Cedar Rapids, Iowa, we go. Butch, you're on the air with us. Hey, Butch.
Hey. Good to talk to you.
Thanks.
I'd like to thank you for hosting this show, too. Freedom of speech is the basis of any free society. You remind me of a guy back in Des Moines when I was a kid and in high school. He said that I may not agree with what you say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it.
You got that right. And that's what it's all about.
It is. My question is... And I was wondering if before you had Mish on, sounded like a pretty good economist or an mm-hmm. Is he still there?
No, he's gone, but he pops in, Butch, every once in a while.
Well, here's my question. If we take the financial crisis and work backwards with it, I see it in four steps, okay? First of all, the banks and the financial institutions are in trouble requiring the bailout. Okay,
right.
Step one.
Yep.
Back from that, we had defaulted loans, house loans, and so on in particular. Step two. Step three was a loss of jobs, which led to the foreclosure on all these houses and the problem with the banks. Step four was that we tore down our protective tariffs. That led to the lost jobs, the defaulted houses, loans on houses, and the problem with the banks and the financial institutions. My question is very simple. Why not put those protective tariffs back into place? And I know that all the politicians, it's boy, you say that, and it's a dirty word. They're talking free trade, and that sounds very lofty. And they say that if we put these protective tariffs back in place, we'll have trade wars worldwide. We'll go into worldwide recession, depression, all that kind of stuff. All this fear-mongering comes into place. But we lived with these protective tariffs for over a century, as I remember.
And they worked.
And now, thanks to the to these tariffs being torn down, look at what the mess is worldwide, a worldwide recession. And yet, these tariffs were torn down with you know, if I missed it, I'm sorry, but I don't remember any big debate on it in Congress. I don't remember much talk about it at all. It was just like all of a sudden, 20, 30 years ago, whenever it was, they just gradually disappeared.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, okay, why did they disappear? What was behind that? If you say, well, gee, it would benefit the rest of the world. You'll get poor people in China and India and so on. Give them a piece of the pie, raise their standard of living. Okay, that's a good idea. That's a high and lofty ideal, but it hasn't happened. Those people in China and in India and all these third world countries, their standard of living hasn't raised at all because of these this free trade.
Well, the other problem, which is, you know, when these investment banks started creating these derivatives, these credit derivatives, to allow them to make the kind of money they all made.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of. I want to see some people indicted on this thing.
I do too. And the derivatives and all that, the way they leveraged. You know, these financial,
everything,
and they're like these financial instruments, they call them. It was like somebody's pipe dream. They were leveraging things that weren't tangible in the first place. You know, it's like we're sitting around selling insurance to each other, and all of a sudden, you know, one thing dropped and then everything fell apart.
Yeah, you need to collect and you couldn't.
Right. Right. Yep,
all right. Thanks, Butch. Appreciate you being on the show. Next up, let's go to Mark on our wildcard line. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, George. Great to speak with you again.
Thank you.
Oh, George, I thought Mish's views were very good, and I wanted to make a couple of comments where I think they fell short.
All right.
And to preface that with just a comment on what Casey, your caller Casey, had mentioned about the surveillance aspect of reality today.
Yeah, he was going well until he started floating off into space.
Right. There's such large subjects that are covered on this show quite often that you have to stay within the context of the subject, or you can get too far away to be able to really relate it in a useful way. But as far as the surveillance aspect, I also remember Dr. Nick Begich, who you had on numerous times, talking about the capability of the HARP system to actually engender various types of emotions in large groups of people, perhaps even individuals. That would probably be more in the purview of the satellite technology to actually focus on an individual, or even what looks like a cell phone tower disguised as an apparatus which can direct this magnetic energy. But as far as the economy goes, George, I get fairly strong hints in your conversation with Mish and to other callers that you at least have a strong suspicion, if not more, an actual knowledge, which I've come to a knowledge of it, Alex Jones has come to a knowledge of it, that the economy is being imploded intentionally, and it's really the greatest transfer of wealth, not just since the 1929 Depression, but in the history of the whole world, and that this is to graduate us very quickly in a very quick process of months and not years into a one-world economy where being as they have received, transferred all the wealth to themselves through an unregulated derivative market.
So
as well as
true.
An
you
unregulated,
are so on it.
And an unregulated housing market. Those two markets right there basically is of what has brought all this about. And it's done intentionally, and I think it tells the largest story about not just the world economy being controlled by very few people at the top who are very strongly into the worship of Lucifer, as they proclaim themselves to be, actually controlling the political structure of the planet, and they will soon control completely, they control a lot of it already, the actual spiritual religious structure of the planet. So comparative to what Scripture says when we go into the book of Revelations, it's looking very similar.
Well, see, what I thought, Mark, was going to take 25 years for them to try to do, they have decided to do it in a matter of months and years.
Yes, it's called that sucker punch, where you actually knock the wind out of the person, but where they have a chance to defend themselves, and they never have the ability after they receive such a hard blow strike back in any way, because the gears are already turning, the wheels are rolling in our reality, and we have to go day to day. But the more we talk about it and expose it, George, and God bless you for being there to do that, you know, the better chance we have to at least ameliorate the effects of it.
And, or slow it down at least, huh?
Slow it down would be great.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Let's go to you, Joy, in Arizona. Hey, Joy, to the world. Hi.
Hello, George.
What you doing?
Listening to you.
Good girl.
Okay. I would like to take this into a whole other direction.
All right. That's open line, so take us away.
Yeah. Well, what if I could actually share with you a way that we could actually bring about peace on the planet?
All right, how would we do that?
Well,
novel idea, but what do we do?
Well, there is actually a way. There is a catalyst, and there's a teacher on this planet, and it's a teacher that is not, it's not a human teacher. It's a plant teacher.
A plant teacher?
Yeah, yes, a plant teacher. I mean, you know that not all of our teachers are human. We have teachers everywhere. I mean, the trees are our teachers as well, and we've all had animal teachers.
All right. Who's this plant? Who's this plant?
Well, there is a plant that gives us some of the very best food on the planet, some of the very best fibers on the planet, some of the very best biomass fuel on the planet, some of the very best healing medicine on the planet. And as if all that wasn't enough, it also is a teacher of peace. And that plant...
Can I guess?
Go right ahead.
Is it corn?
No.
Oh.
It's cannabis.
Cannabis.
The cannabis plant. Cannabis hemp, cannabis barren marijuana.
I was gonna say hemp as my second guess.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, the whole entire plant, it has so many benefits to our planet. And one of the things that it's been used for, oops, are you there?
Yeah, just go ahead. You have 20 seconds.
Oh, okay. Well, it's also been used as currency. And there's a way, and it's called not cattle.
Well, you know what? It's a good fuel. We know that. And it's good for medicinal purposes. We know that. As far as the rest, I don't think they're going to ever go that way. We'll be back. Well, this Friday night, I'll be in Las Vegas for a meet and greet. Information on that, visit UFOconference.com. That starts at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. And then right after that, we're going to have a live coast-to-coast program. So you'll enjoy that. And then Linda Moulton Howe will be joining me for that as well. That'll be this Friday night in Las Vegas, Nevada. And welcome back to Coast with Open Lines. Let's go right back to the phones. Doug in Oregon, you are up with us, Doug. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Already. Getting ready. Getting ready for tomorrow.
Yep. On a momentous occasion. Your last guest, Mitch, was really good. I really appreciated this stuff. I wish he was still on. Would like to maybe see if you could help me flesh out a concept here, in reference to the economy, and by that I mean, full focus for a second and look at it from the bigger picture. And I wonder
if the economy as we know it is really just an artificial construct. And what I mean by that is if you look at the way energy systems on the planet and in the universe order themselves, they kind of always have this ebb and flow, and there's I'm trying to look for the words here, but you know what I'm saying? There's a natural balancing act that goes on. If we can just line ourselves up with these natural forces, and this is kind of a synthesis of your recent guest, Gary Schwartz, with the God Experiment.
Yes.
And who's your other guest? David Bloom with the Alcohol Can Be a Gas. Those two guests. Their idea is lining up with God's ordering principles. It seems like we don't have to worry about all this stuff. And by pulling focus, we don't have to be so afraid and frightened about what's going to happen to us on an individual level, because all these things are part of a greater design. And so I think the people that think they're trying to control us by controlling the dollars are living in an illusion, number one. And the people that are afraid of the money being taken away don't have to really worry about it, because there's a higher order that's everything's already working out just fine. I don't know if I get that point across well, but I'm just throwing it out there to see if, get your take on that. And
well, I tell you what, I'm going to bring Mish back on for us. And Mish, you've got a couple people have requested you to be on, so I'm going to hold you on for just a little bit longer. Hope you weren't ready to go to bed, Mish.
George, I'm always up writing at this time, it's heading on to 3 a.m. here. But believe it or not, I'm usually up writing at this time, so I'm happy to be on.
Doug's still with us in Oregon. Doug, your wish was to talk to Mish, and there it is. I made it happen for you.
Oh, that's just wonderful. Mish, I really appreciate your insights and your perspective on this whole economic structure that we're looking at globally. My goodness, this really is an amazing shift that's going on. It seems like planetary.
Let me paraphrase you too, Doug, and tell me if I'm right or wrong. But Mish, he talks about how the economy should have this natural flow to it, and that it's just not flowing naturally anymore, and something's weird. Am I right, Doug?
That's very much it. And if we study nature and how it ebbs and flows, spiritual laws, the laws of nature, if we look at those things, we see a natural order. And we humans get out of touch with that, and that's where we see all these problems. So I guess
Mish, why isn't flowing naturally? And Doug, I'll let you listen on the radio.
Well, I would say the reason things aren't flowing naturally is we've got a government intervention into every phase of our lives. Just we look at the what we've done with the GSEs. We've had Bush's home ownership society. We got promotion of houses instead of having people make a natural choice of whether they want to live in a house or rent an apartment. We've got the government trying to dictate what it is that people do. We've got government reallocating distribution of resources. Look at our ethanol program. It's an absolute disaster. Raising corn to grow ethanol is very unproductive. Ethanol can be produced very easily from sugarcane in Brazil. Raising corn on a taxpayer subsidy to produce corn takes that grain away from, that could be feeding chickens and cattle, drives up the price of corn, or did. And in the meantime, what happened to the price of ethanol? It's now collapsed, and ethanol producers have gone bankrupt. So if you want to know why things aren't flowing naturally, look at the interventionist policies of governments, not just in the United States, but in China, in France. We've got all these bailout plans here. We've got bailout plans. The IMF has bailed out Iceland. It's bailing out Hungary. Europe, France, Germany has made poor loans to Eastern European bloc countries. They have to be bailed out. All of this started with massive government intervention that it just grew worse and worse and worse under the Bush administration. So it's all finally come to a head. I think that is the answer to your question, is the government needs to get out of the way Instead, we've got the government trying to literally dictate the price of everything, from orange juice to gasoline, to where the money should go, to how people live, whether it should be a house or an apartment. Yeah, that's a pretty bad flow, don't you think?
Next up, we'll go to Colby in Tulsa, Oklahoma. If this is for you, Mish, you can take it. If it's just for me, I will. Go ahead, Colby.
Well, both of you guys can take it. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
First time calling in. I was actually wanting to talk to Mish. I thought I missed him the first time around.
Okay, good. We've got him here, so I'll let you chat with him.
Okay, well, this went into one of your last comments you mentioned before you left the first time. You were talking about needing to make more jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a huge point that's not focused on enough, and it's like, where do jobs actually come from? And here's the thing, I voted Democrat in the last election in 2004. I wasn't old enough to vote in the 2000 election, but I think you should look at, like, which party is going to make more jobs. And I think there's one party that actually focuses on making more jobs and not making more handouts.
Well, I certainly agree with that, but I'll tell you right now, look at what the Bush administration has done, and look at where the jobs have all come from. We've got a Republican Party that's supposed to be a party of small government, but the Bush administration expanded government more rapidly than any other time in the history of the United States of America. We've got an interventionist policy that's starting wars overseas, so we've got jobs going to the defense industry. But those, it makes no sense to be producing all of these bombs. We can blow up the world dozens of times over. So who's going to create more jobs? One has to look at what the jobs are, and are those jobs any good? I'm horrified at the expansion of government under the Bush administration. So and you can say, well, you know, where is it going to stop? I don't see it stopping under McCain. Unfortunately, I don't see it stopping under Obama either. But I'll tell you right flat out, if we're going to spend money, I'd rather have that money be spent right here in the United States, building bridges, rebuilding our roads, doing something with our energy grid, than blowing up the rest of the world. So on that score, I would rather see Obama win. But as I said earlier, we need to stop doing all this stuff, and I'm actually voting for Ron Paul.
You're going to write him in, I guess, huh?
I am going to write him in.
Salt Lake City, Utah. Steve, you're up with us. Hey, Steve.
Hey there. First of all, I wanted to let you know I sure enjoyed Ghost to Ghost the other night. I think you did a great job with that.
Well, thank you. That was my first one. I had a good time with that.
But I look forward to many more with you. I think it was a great format. Anyway, I did have one question for you, George. In the first hour right at the top of the show, you had mentioned that you were excited for change, which I think that word always throws up a tagline of one particular candidate. But further, you mentioned that you're looking past the last 8 years, you're kind of excited for change, and it's been a rough 8 years for you. I know I'm an outsider looking in, but I think especially the last 5 years have been pretty good to you.
Well, no, when I say me, I'm talking about everything in general. You know, this is not me being, self-serving, because, you know, the last 5 years personally, career-wise, have been phenomenal for me. Not even just good, but phenomenal. After many years, Steve, in trenches, believe me. But I'm talking about for the country overall. The last 8 years, man, we've gone through a lot. And it's just one of those moments where it's time to just sigh and say, it's over. That portion of our life is over. Let's try to build a new. Look, I don't know if the new president is going to face some kind of act of terrorism, another calamity, who knows what. But I just want a break from the action. Don't you?
I do. And you got to agree, too, though, that the Bush administration wasn't dealt a great hand the first 6 months of their administration. And I think it was kind of house of cards when we had September 11th, which caused a lot of changes. So it almost seems like this show is kind of taking a turn to the Obama camp.
No, maybe I'm just taking it off. Are you kidding? Did you hear the show last night? I got ripped up and down for putting a guy on who went to the Supreme Court to try to get the election stopped because of Obama. So, I mean, we balance it as much as we can. There are going to be nights that you get a topic you don't like because you don't agree with it. But I bet the next night you will. Was that you, Mish?
Yeah, that was me. I just wanted to say I thought you were very balanced earlier tonight. And I tried to go out of my way to follow suit. And the caller has a valid point. Bush was not dealt a very good hand.
No administration in my history has been dealt a good hand. I mean, the next president who comes in is going to have a horrible hand.
Absolutely.
It seems like they've all got bad hands to play with.
No, actually, Clinton was dealt a good hand. He had the internet revolution to look forward to. He had a miraculous productivity, collapsing commodity prices. When oil fell to $12 a barrel, all of that stuff was wind at his back. But the question is, what did he do with the hand that he was dealt? And what did Bush do with the hand he dealt? I would say that Clinton did a better job with the hand that he was dealt. Bush was dealt a bad hand, but he did a horrid job with it.
I agree. Unfortunately, Clinton was holding the Joker card and played it. He did. Let's go to the international line. Stan in Ontario. Go ahead, Stan.
Oh, George, I'm north of the 49th here, and since you've been talking, I've come up with 1,000 subjects. Now, there are different thoughts I want to say. I don't know what to go back to.
Well, only get one, Stanley. Go ahead.
I know. To start with, I want to ask Mish, he mentioned 10 countries that were in recession. What is the one that isn't?
China. China's manufacturing is in recession, but its GDP, if you believe it, now, that's a question, whether or not you believe GDP anywhere, but especially China, its GDP is still rising at a 9% rate, but its manufacturing is contracting now. And why is its manufacturing contracting? Because it can no longer export all of the junk that we've been buying. The shipping indices have absolutely collapsed. The cost of a ship to rent has gone from $256,000 a day down to $2,000 a day, barely enough to cover the cost of fuel to ship these goods. That just tells you how much the demand for goods, for junk coming from anywhere, has absolutely collapsed. It's a stunning collapse in trade, a stunning collapse in the demand for goods, and we're going to see it at the retail stores. It's going to be miserable for the retailers, and that's just the way it is. But, they're trying to get consumers to spend, but they really need to shore up their balance sheets and stop spending, and I think we're going to see that, and it's going to happen at Christmas.
Did I see where the big conglomerate, Linens and More, for example, they're going out of business?
Linens and Things, yeah.
Is that it, Linens and Things?
And Circuit City today announced they're going to close 154 stores. I expect they will close all of them sometime next year.
Well, and it's not just the economy. The internet is killing some of these retail establishments. I mean, I know, for example, I just bought a friend of mine a refrigerator. And basically, I lent him the money for it, and he'll pay me. He's good for it because I know him very well. But I went online and did it, Mish. In the old days, I'd go into one of the big stores. I'd do it. This time, I just did it on the internet. It got delivered, and it's done.
We did the same thing. Our microwave went out. And so we got a really nice microwave for like $300, ordered it over the internet. And it came the next day. And it actually, one-third of the cost of it was for the guy to install, actually. I mean, that is where
we're at. And it's convenient. It shows up. You don't have to fight traffic.
Right.
I do a lot of internet shopping in Los Angeles because the traffic there is a mess. And, it's easier in St. Louis. But, I mean, it's easy to do. You sit back, and if the retailer is a good retailer, and there are a lot of big ones out there, you can order online. Now, they're lucky enough they're getting the sales from the internet and not the not their facility. At least they're getting their money somehow. But you're right. They're starting to close down these big lease places, and then you're going to have a commercial building problem, aren't you?
Oh, we've got a huge commercial real estate problem. We've overbuilt everything. Near me, there's just miles and miles of strip malls, and they're still going in. And you have stores going up, even while there was a mall in, I think I'm going to say Akron, but it's Ohio, a huge mall closed. And there's malls in Florida that are closing. Meanwhile, they're building new malls down the road. And all that's going to do, it's just going to cause a distortion. Most of these malls go up kind of like on the outskirts of cities. And so then the downtowns of cities decay as people go, you know, outside to shop. There's only so much shopping that people can do, and only so many malls we need, and we're building new stores and new malls, even while others are closing, at a time when consumers are retrenching. It's going to be a disaster, and that's where the regional banks are in trouble. The regional banks stayed away from the subprime lending crisis. They didn't get caught up in that. However, the regional banks are more leveraged to commercial real estate than at any other time in history. And so a lot of these regional banks that think they're okay because they escaped the mortgage crisis, they're going to get hit with commercial real estate.
Absolutely. Let's go to Todd in Arizona. You're up with us. Hey, Todd, go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Knorr. You deserve the Edward R. Murrow for your program last night on the Obama crimes. And I just want to say, if I can wrap up with Obama and the election, I want to talk about the President Kennedy assassination. And if I were to talk to you before I read the Vincent Bugliosi book, Reclaiming History, I was a blind and thinker for the conspiracy. But Bugliosi just lays it out and says, hey, you know, Oswald did it. Ruby was a nut. You know, these guys had no money, no connection to the mob. And there's no way these conspiracy guys add up.
I want to bring him on, I think, for the Kennedy assassination show.
I know he lives in L.A., and that book, it's 1,000 pages. Get it and start reading it, because you only got about 20 days, you know?
Well, that's true. That's true. Todd, I'm going to put you on hold because we're coming up to the top of the hour, okay? I'll do that. Hang with us a little. Mish, what do I do with you? What do you want to do?
I'm willing to stay on. How long do you want me? How long are you going on here?
Well, I've got two more hours, but I tell you, I want to keep you for the economy questions. You're okay. Better than I am on that.
All right.
Okay? So we'll do that. And when you decide you got to go, you just tell me, okay?
All right, fair enough.
We'll be back in a moment. We're going to co-anchor tonight's open lines. We'll be back.